Okay. Hi, my name is Dove. I'm a sexaholic. That's why I'm on this call. And Guard Your Eyes and some friends on Guard Your Eyes, who I met through the forum and the emails, asked me to, we were discussing some things, and the idea came up. I don't know if it was my idea or their idea, because there are many people who, especially recently, had some sincere questions about recovery as a firm person. Questions and problems, issues, complaints, things of that nature. So I wanted to try to share for about an hour on that topic. And Bezras Hashem, we're gonna do this. We're gonna do something at least. I hope that everything I'm going to say is honest, and whether it's correct, nobody knows. But it's going to be, I hope, it's going to be honest and true, and my ego won't be involved in it. I hope, and I'm asking you to help me do that, Ribbono Shel'Olam. The something that's a basis for this whole thing, this whole issue of advice in recovery and dealing with questions that aren't recovery questions, you know, like how do I stay sober or something, that's not the purpose of this call. The purpose of this call is things outside recovery, okay? Things that are outside recovery, things that are religious concerns, you know, family concerns, social concerns, other concerns of that nature, you know, that are not recovery per se. Anyway, so the issues that we're going to talk about aren't recovery issues mostly. Recovery issues are things like how do I apply the 12 steps, or in very general sense, how do I trust God? How do I be honest? How do I stay sober? What do I do with desires? That's not the focus of this call, really, but those things are going to come up. Similar to the idea of shalom bayis, where you've got a person who's suffering, a husband who's suffering from depression and a wife who's suffering from bipolar disorder. Their bipolar disorder and their depression and other narishkeit and terrible things that they might be doing in this, they need to be dealt with as separate entities. And you're not going to succeed very much if you keep seeing everything as a shalom bayis issue, because then you're going to be blaming each party for their behavior, and it becomes a shalom bayis issue if you make it that way. But you don't have to make it that way. So I want to just say that a lot of the issues that we're going to be talking about are not directly recovery issues. They're personal issues that real human beings have with their recovery. I just want to clarify that. Another thing. So, where am I? Okay. The other thing that I want to just mention, a few disclaimers, a few clarifications before we get started. One is that a great man named I don't remember his first name. I think it was Abraham Maslow, Maslow, a smart psychologist. Kind of ushered in a new wave of psychological stuff after the whole Freud era, where everything was about sex and whatever, crazy stuff. He ushered in this new era, and one of the things that he said, one of his little sayings was very applicable to a lot of stuff that I hear people talk about, and I want people to know about this before we even start talking about the issues. He said, "To a man with only a hammer in his tool chest, every problem looks like a nail. This is very important. Meaning, if I'm a small person, my life experience and the solutions that I found, the problems that I endured, these things, if I'm a small person, I will see everything through that and only through that. So it's quite natural to do this. And I'm sure we all suffer from this to some degree, you know. So this is the basis to me behind why there are a lot of people who make a few mistakes in understanding or relating to the program. For example, you'll have people in a recovery program, and they'll say to someone who calls or posts on Guard Your Eyes or whatever, oh, you need to surrender. You need to admit you're powerless. You need to, and you know, they'll bring a pasuk, or they'll bring a gemara even, you know, to try to support it, like, Elamali Ozraina Yachalo or something, I don't know, that you're powerless without a miracle from God and whatever. They'll bring some kind of raya maybe even to make it sound palatable and Jewish or something, even though that's not what the program's really talking about, to me at least. That's not the 12-step way that I'm familiar with. The 12-step way that I'm familiar with is not, the first step doesn't say we believed that we were powerless. It says we admitted we were powerless. Admitted means that it came from you. Not that it came from outside as dogma. There's no real program dogma. There's religious dogma. There's Torah dogma. Okay? But there's no program. There's no real program dogma. Small people want to turn program suggestions into dogma. People want to turn it into dogma and say, you have to do this. Oh, you're only going to stop when you finally admit that you're powerless. You know, or something. Oh, and people say, I'm powerless, but what about Bechira? And what about this? And what about that? Which we'll talk about a little bit more later when I get to the nitty-gritty of some of these problems. But Erstens, I just want to clarify, this is usually coming from a very nutty and unhealthy place. There's no place in the program anywhere that I'm aware of that says you have to admit that you're powerless. The first step says we admitted we were powerless. If you don't believe that you're powerless, then you don't believe you're powerless. And that's the end of the story. None of the steps apply to you as steps. The ideas, you can accept some of the ideas if you want to. That's fine. No, the 12-step program doesn't have a monopoly on its principles, except the steps as like 1, 2, 3, 1 leads to 2, 2 leads to 3, etc. That doesn't begin if you don't know that you're powerless, you know? For someone to tell you that you need to believe that is like trying to convert someone to another religion. It's crazy. You know, we admitted we were powerless over lust and that our lives or over whatever it is, the addiction, that thing that we're addicted to, and our lives have become unmanageable. Not our sobriety has become unmanageable, or our sex, you know, minds, or our thoughts have become unmanageable. I mean, it says our lives, not alcohol. Alcoholics don't say, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and our drinking has become unmanageable. In other words, I drink so much that I can't manage this drinking. I can't stop the drinking. That's what powerless is. That our lives have become unmanageable means my life. That's a whole different thing. In other words, you see from your life itself, mine ude, you look at yourself, you look at your life, and you say, Gewalt. This is unmanageable. I can't continue. And I've had so many guys email me saying, Dov, I can't continue. I'm willing to do anything. Thank you. And I say, well, where's your name? Well, I'm not comfortable telling you my name. Well, you're willing to do anything, but you're not comfortable. But you're not willing to be yourself. Like, if you don't trust me for this, then why would you trust me at all? You know, it's like a wife saying to the husband when she finds out that he is an addict, and she says, I want you to tell me everything you've done. Okay, I understand why a wife would want to do that. God, I can't, you know, I don't know if I'd be able to tolerate anything that most of these wives tolerate. I would, you know, jump off a roof. I don't know. It would be terrible if my wife did half of the things that I did. But okay, but what happens when he does tell you? Are you going to believe him? You can't trust him, so what are you wasting your time for, you know? So she needs help. She needs help. She needs to talk to somebody, a third party. Her husband isn't the one who's going to save her. And she's saying, save me by telling me the facts about what you did. And she knows she can't believe him anyway. If he tells her a bit, she knows that he might have done 10 times more, and she'll never know, you know? So it's funny how that works. But, you know, so that it's the same kind of thing that I was saying before. It's just, you know, for the what are you trusting? If you don't trust me to say your name, then what do you mean you're willing to do anything? In other words, you're willing to do anything with the caveat. So you're like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who goes into the cave, but he brings a sandwich with him in case, you know, in case there's no karuv and there's no spring of water, and, you know, in case God doesn't come through, so I have a sandwich. It doesn't work that way, you know, sorry. So, you know, I'm not laughing at the person. I'm just saying I see this in myself, so I can laugh about it. That's all. So getting back to the thing I was saying before, the hammer and the tool chest, the guys who say you have to admit this and you have to admit that, no, that's not what admitting is. Admitting means that it comes from yourself. So that's why I tell people who ask me, how do I know if I'm an addict, which is what that gentleman who was speaking before asked that we cover, and this I don't think has to do with tonight's the main points, but if someone asks me, but I think it touches us on, I think what you expressed, something that's behind a lot of the complaints that people have in the program, oh, it's happy courses, is this, is that, really, you don't know if you're an addict or not. Often that's the real issue here. If you, you know, you get into an argument about what to do about addiction, one second, you don't know if you're an addict or not. Why don't you find out if you're an addict first? Oh, no, I can't, because it's apikorsis. Wait. The facts about yourself are apikorsis. That's apikorsis? You know, I'm not telling you anything. I'm saying, find out for yourself. Write your story down on paper, okay? If you write your story down on paper, on a computer it's a little weaker because it doesn't pull that much on a person's memory. And emotionally, it doesn't pull that much on you if you type it on a computer because it's not in your own handwriting. It says in the Sanatokov, V'chosem Yad Kol Adam Bo. Okay? It means one of the things that it points out, that it's saying is you see your own signature. It doesn't mean you see your name. It means you see your signature in your own handwriting. When you write this, your story out from the first time that you had a sexual experience that got you in trouble of some kind, you know, that you noticed that, oh, it's powerful, you know, something. First time you were attracted to schmutz or a woman or a man or whatever. So you write it out on paper and you go year after year until today, all the things that happened to you that you did, not in a form of like, well, and then I turned this way and I did that. This isn't a dirty story that you're trying to tell. You're just trying to write down your history. If you go through this from the very beginning, very first time, till the last time that you acted out your lust, your fantasies, from all the way back then until all the way to now, you're going to end with a package. And when you go read through the whole package, you'll see if it is just a series of mistakes that you're making because of tivus that you have, which is normal. Everybody does that. You know, you go and you're Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and you're clapping, I'll say it, I'll this, I'll that. Who is that talking about? You know? So this is real. People do these things. You know, you're not, you know, from Mars. So, but if you see a pattern here where you see a progression, you know, one thing leads to another, and you see that that there's a cycle here of tshuva that gets you all high and you're all better, and then you get even worse than before, you know? Or you see that in every situation in your life, this morphed into a different thing and a different thing and a different thing. And then when you get married, there's so many people that say, oh, don't worry, Chaver, when you get married, everything's going to be okay. When you can finally have sex with a real live woman, you'll see all your tivus are going to disappear and you're going to be fine. It'll be possible salo, and all this is wonderful. You know, and then you see that it's not so for you. You see that for you it wasn't so, you know. For you, you know, once you got married, how many times do I hear from guys, you know, after I got married, I did averus and things that I would never have thought of before when I was a bachur. I didn't have the guts, but when I got married, I had the guts for some reason. So you see that when they got married, it got worse. Does that mean that I need to go say to you, whoever you are, whoever's listening, you guy, does that mean I have to say to you, ha-ha, when you get married, you'll see it'll get worse? That's what I said before. A guy with only a hammer in his tool chest thinks that every problem is a nail. He sees everything the way, he thinks that everyone is the way he is. Okay? If you're not an addict, then probably when you get married, things are going to get better. If you are an addict, probably when you get married, things are just going to get worse. They might get better for a time, but then you're going to eventually see that marriage, married sex just isn't going to do it for you because your wife doesn't want to do all the crazy tricks that you learned already, and it's going to drive you crazy, and you always thought that she would eventually fulfill all my fantasies, and she's not doing this for me, and he's not doing that for me, and da-da-da-da-da. And eventually it's going to, you know, you're going to be holding breath. You're going to be holding your breath again, you know? And things are going to get worse. If you're an addict, if you're not an addict, that's not going to happen. You're going to be like every normal person, you know? Everybody has ups and downs and problems. And that's why there's tshuva. And that's why there's Sifrei Chassidus and Sifrei Musar and Sifrei everything else in the Torah for people with the Yetzer Hara. But if you write your story out, and you see a pattern, a cycle, a progression, and you see that what the cost is, and you see that, taka, it is unmanageable. I really can't continue this way. Then you might be an addict. And it's time, I think, I suggest, to find someone who you can trust and share your entire story with them. Just like Rebbe Elimelech suggests in Tzedel Katan Os Yigimel, find a mora derech or afilu chover ne'emon and share everything. Whatever it says, and don't hold back from him anything with nehabusha. Share the whole thing. Find a psychologist who you trust, who you think is safe to go to, or a rebbe who you trust, who you think is really safe to go to, or a chover ne'emon, and who you can really trust, and who you think it's safe for both of you that you go to, and open up about your whole story. And then all the amunakashes and all this other stuff, not all of them, but many of them will just disappear. Because they're all just excuses sometimes. They're just excuses for why I shouldn't do recovery. Because you don't know if you're an addict or not. And that's why it's very unhealthy to get into arguments and back and forth with somebody who's just for his own sake, asking questions. And he hasn't determined yet whether he's an addict or not. So it's all pre-questions. It's a waste of time. First, find out if you think you're an addict or not. Once you've determined that you're not, so then don't worry about the 12 steps. You don't need any of it. And if you are an addict, so then it's time to talk about issues that, you know, that you might have. There are so many things to talk about. Baruch Hashem, I have some friends who did send me some suggested questions to cover in this call. And I want to just run through a few of them. And I really wish that... Now, I did mute everybody just for background noise sake. But if you want to unmute yourself, you can. This is a recorded call, though, remember. And it's also an open call, where anybody could be listening or recording it. And you never know. So if you're afraid of your voice being recognized or something, I understand. That's your decision. But if you know, if people can discuss things and we can actually get into a little discussion, especially after 9:30, I think that would be much more fruitful. But I just want to cover a few points and then, with God's help, elaborate where necessary. I can't stress enough how important that point that I said before, though, is to me. The 12 steps do not say you need to believe your powerlessness. We just admitted we are powerlessness. It's something that, what do you know? If you look at your story, you know the truth. You know the truth. It's not a question of, oi, but the Torah says you have the chira. No. If you see that you are clearly powerless, you've tried all this, you've tried all that, and you see it's not working, then, okay, I have a problem. The Torah seems to disagree, but I see that this is the fact. So now, what am I going to do about that? The Torah seems to say different. You know, I have a bit of a problem. I understand that 100%. But to reject it because it can't be true, because it doesn't make any sense to me. You know? And if you look through your whole thing and you want to be convinced by someone that you're not powerless, you know, after you see your story and you see, oh my gosh, no matter what I do, it keeps going and going and it progresses, so then maybe I am, you know. That's all up to you. But first you should know, one way or the other, I think, you know. Now, again, there's no end to this problem. It's the hammer and the nail business again. There are so many people who are not addicts at all, by any definition. They're not addicts, and yet they're on Guard Your Eyes, because the majority of people on Guard Your Eyes are probably not addicts, I believe, because it's not an alcoholism website. It is a sexaholism, sex addiction, porn addiction, lust addiction website. Okay? If this were an alcoholism from alcoholism website, there would be so many fewer people calling. You know, even though you know maybe alcoholism is more prevalent, but they would just be going to AA. But since it's an aveira, people get all confused, and they say, "Well, it's a bechira issue. The Torah says you have bechira." Well, if it was about, we're talking about addiction, right? Well, yes, that's what you're saying. We're talking about, okay. So then I'm saying, if we were talking about alcoholism, does the Torah say you don't have bechira, that you have bechira whether you're going to drink alcohol or not? Since when is it an aveira to drink alcohol? Oh, so you can kvetch for the alcoholic. It's holding by it that it's an aveira for. Where do you see that? Araya, please. Where do you see that? How do you know? Well, v'nishmartem ha'olanaf shaseichem. So then how many people on this call are fat? How many people on this call are smokers? Do you realize that when you smoke a cigarette, you're doing an iser d'araisa then, if you believe that it's taka, you know, an iser for him to drink alcohol? You're doing an iser d'araisa, probably worse than alcohol, smoking a cigarette. So, you don't believe it. I don't believe it. So let's stop, you know, we can stop the argument right there. That's the way I see it. So there's no real argument over here. So, to me. But would people be kvetching about whether it's Bechira or not if it wasn't an Aveira that we're talking about? No. It's only because the addiction happens to be to an Aveira that instead of alcohol, it's porn or something. So therefore, oh yeah, yeah. All the kashas are coming in. That it's Bechira, it's not. It's this. Many people who are usually involved in addiction, recovery, or the professional side of that, have come to believe that addiction is a disease that's not related to depression directly, or to OCD directly, or to anxiety. Directly, it's a separate problem, you know. Personally, I think that, and this is what the words in the big book of AA seem to imply to me, that we tried this, we tried that, and we tried everything. And we found out that probably no human power could help us out. You know, probably no great Rebbe with great advice and Torah and this and that could probably help us. We found out that no shrink no psychologist could probably help us. We found out that we were in real trouble. And this is why we come to the 12 steps. 12 steps is for a person who is not able to do it with any other means. So, Mamela, if you want to use Torah, Gesunder, hey, go ahead and use Torah. The program's not arguing with you. There's no argument here. No arguments. Please try everything. How do you know you're powerless if you haven't tried everything? Try everything. Instead, what do people do? They come arguing with 12 steps people that they have to try everything. Well, are you clean? If you're clean, so then describe to me how you did it. I'll see if it's different than something that I tried. And if not, so then, you know, okay, so then, you know, we'll talk. Maybe I should do what you did. Maybe I did what you did already, you know, or maybe I just can't do what you did for some reason, I believe. Okay. But, you know, but if you're not clean, then please, you know, or if you're not an addict at all, so you don't know what you're talking about, so then please, you know, I would say to the person, please stop arguing with the 12 steps or with the 12 steps groups. Just do what's good for you and leave us alone, you know. That's just a request, you know. If this were alcoholism, I don't think people would be making any, would have any kashas at all. They say, oh, good. Go to 12 steps, mazel tov, you know. It's a disease. All of a sudden, because the Torah isn't working, they get all fahitzed about it because it really, really bothers people. It's like a chilul Hashem to them. It's Torah. Hashem has much bigger plates than they do, I think. I don't think he minds if people realize that they have a disease and they use a disease model like AA to deal with something, you know, to get the help that they need. I think that's, you know, obviously, I think that's great. It's called taking responsibility for yourself. And people wonder, what do you mean? The 12 steps, it says you're powerless. It's the ultimate in irresponsibility. No, not really. It's actually taking finally taking responsibility for yourself and doing very uncomfortable things, like admitting the truth to other people. And working the steps with a real live person called a sponsor and sharing your recovery after you've been sober and worked all the steps, sharing your recovery with someone else who needs it, not hiding from everybody so that you can keep it all to yourself like a greedy person. Well, these are all things that are very hard to do. They're uncomfortable, you know? So, but people are willing to do it. A couple of things. I'm just going to run through with the help of a friend some of the things that people argue about and kvetch about. Again, you know, I'm not going to keep repeating it, but just I do want to say if you're not an addict, if you don't know for sure if you're an addict yourself because you've never written your story down and looked at the whole picture, you know, you're just going by what you know. What you know is nothing. Write it all down from the very beginning to the very end, and then your eyes will be opened a little bit more, you know. And I've had many people that I shared this thing with, and in a certain recovery call I'm involved with, many of the guys do that, and they share their stuff with the group. They share their whole thing with the group after they wrote it out. and I've had some guys say a week or two, a month or two after they write it all out, they'll call me and they'll say, you know, I wrote it all out, I thought it through. I don't think that I'm an addict. And I go, Gesunder Heid. I know a guy who was going to meetings for like 2 years, and you know, and he calls me practically in tears. He's like, I've made up my mind that I'm not. I mean, maybe he wasn't in tears, but he was clearly very emotional about it. I don't think I'm an addict. And the first thing out of my mouth was, okay, you know. And I've seen people, and I know people, who would argue with this guy and say, well, I don't know, once an addict, always an addict, it says, you know. They'll grab a motto. You only have a hammer in your toolbox, so you're seeing every problem as a nail. That's not the way, you know, to me. So I'll say, Gesunder, hey, great, let's talk about it. I'm not interested in arguing with him. I don't have to second guess him and say, you know, anyhow, you know, you have to do it my way, you know, that's ridiculous. The 12 steps are suggestions, as my sponsor put that, said it, and that's what it says in the AA big book at the end. This entire book, this book is meant to be suggestive only. The ideas in this book are meant to be suggestive. They're suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly reveal more to you and to us, you know? So that's all. They're suggestions. People have this problem. They say, how can I learn? So I'm going to go through these bullets that this friend of mine, great man, who's probably on this call, he texted me a bunch of things that he thinks bother a lot of people. One is, how can we learn emunah from goyim? To me, the answer to that is very simple, because I've looked in my sponsor's eyes and learned from him. Did I learn emunah from him? No. My sponsor was Catholic. For the first 15 years in SA, my sponsor, he was a Catholic guy. I didn't learn emunah from him. I learned seriousness about emunah from him. Okay? That's what I learned from him. I didn't learn how he serves his God or something. I didn't learn that. I just learned that this is for real for him. For real. You can go to yeshiva and you can do this, and it's not necessarily so that you're going to, you're going to learn about emunah, but to learn emunah itself, people know that comes from your mother, you know? It comes from when you were on the knees of your mother. They say this about Gedolim. Where did he get it from? You know, from his mother, from his father when he was a little boy. Emunah, you might not learn real emunah in yeshiva. You might not. You learn a lot about emunah. You learn all the truth about emunah. But the actual faith in your heart is sometimes it's just the Yerusha, you know. Sometimes it's something that you learn when you were little, even maybe before you could talk, perhaps, I don't know. I'm not so sure. I have a whole drasha about it, but that's a little beyond the scope of this call, I think. So, no, we don't learn emunah from goyim in 12 steps. We learn seriousness about emunah from goyim. We learn a desperation about emunah from goyim, if they're goyim or if they're from Jews. Who cares who they are? If you walk into a cancer ward and you see people, children, adults, you see them dealing with the fact that they're going to die, you will walk out a changed man or woman. You will walk out a changed person. You will. It doesn't matter if they're Jews or if they're goyim. It doesn't matter who they are. If you walk in there and you spend time with them, if you have a heart in your body at all that's beating, you will walk out a changed person. So you learned from goyim. That's all that happens in SA, AA, NA, GA, DA, whatever. I'm trying not to mention any fellowship by name. I'm trying to say 12 steps. But that's what happens. That's all. To me, that's a huge point. The other one is, another thing is Sheva Yipol V'Tzadik. Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kum. Okay? And the Zohar HaKadosh says, in fact, on that, if I'm understanding it correctly, that Sheva Yipol Tzadik, that a tzadik comes from someone who falls, davka falls. Similar to the idea of Ein Divrei Torah Miskayimin Ela Misha Nichshol Behem. That Sheva Yipol Tzadik. You know, so he asked me. He said, "People say, you know, the program says you're not allowed to drink any alcohol, or you're not allowed to act out at all. You know, you can't have any. So, but the Torah says Sheva Yipol. You know, I couldn't quite understand what the question was, but to me it sounds like, if people want to say that, it sounds like they're saying that the Torah is makel. You know, I don't know. Is that really what they mean, that the Torah is more makel than recovery is? I think the point really is going to this issue, though. I think the point isn't that. The point of that kasha, so to speak, is that it bothers people how, like AA says, well, you can't have any alcohol, you know? And let's say some lust fellowship says you're not allowed to have, you know, you can't have any of this, you know. So again, they're forgetting these are suggestions. These aren't rules. You know, it's just saying if you want to do it our way, then this is the way we do it, you know. So it's not a rule. People take their twisted view of Yiddishkeit and they put it onto the program. And this is part of why some people become, which I'll talk about soon in Mitzvah Shem, people have difficulty with Frumkeit, not with Emunah, but with Frumkeit in the program. If you have difficulty with Emunah in the while you're in recovery, then trust me, your Emunah difficulties came before the program. They came from your Yiddishkeit. They didn't come from your program. You know, they were revealed in the program. So if you start kvetching and saying, Gevalt, they shouldn't have gone to recovery. Oh, you mean it's better to not know that you don't really believe than to be a faker and to find out after you die in Shemayim? Because they know, you know. They're like children. They're smart. They can tell up there, you know. So people have this thing. They say, well, hey, what's the matter with the, you know, the people in recovery? They say, I have to be clean. The Torah says that, you know, you do an aveira, you do tshuva and this, and not only that, but the Torah says, you know, the Torah has this thing about, we say that tshuva is beautiful. I've heard over the years on the forum, people have shared, chizik, you know, they'll give chizik to a guy who's still doing aveiras. Hashem loves your tshuva, even if you fall sometimes. He loves that you strive and you struggle, and every schlep and every kvetch and every cry and every groan and every this, it's Hashem counts it all and he puts it in a bottle in Shemayim and he saves it. And after 120, even though you're beaten and bruised with many averus, you'll come up to Shemayim and they'll say, you know, Piskusharim Ve'eva Gaisadik, you know, whatever the whole thing. And the violins are playing, you know, it's like, okay, you know. I believe in all of that for a normal person. But if you're not a normal person, you know, if you have a cycle and you're doing things and you see that it's cyclical, it follows you in every situation in your life and in one way or another, and you're getting worse and worse, you know? So then, over time. So then, I mean, that's how I saw that I was probably an addict. The other thing was I came to see that this could not continue, that there was no way that I could continue living this way. Okay, again, that's the second half of the first step. We came to believe, we admitted we were powerless over lust. This isn't dogma. I admitted it myself. I don't need God to tell me, the Torah to tell me, you to tell me, my Rebbe to tell me, my doctor to tell me, my psychologist, my wife, I don't need anyone else to tell me. I admit it. I see that it's true because I look at my story in detail, and I put it all together and look at it. Beskira achas, you know, that's how Hashem judges us. By the way, Rosh Hashanah, it says He sees it all. Beskira achas. Why beskira achas? Why doesn't He let Him see it all separate? Why does He have to? Why does it have to say beskira achas? He sees it all because beskira achas is the truth. You look at the individuals, okay, whatever. But when you see the whole picture together, it gives you a whole, it gives you a flavor of what's going on over here. It's sort of like Hushim ben Dan. You know, the brothers, the Shivtei Ka, at the end of their lives, when they were at, like, probably almost one of the higher levels that they ever reached in their lives, probably, when Yaakov Avinu died and they were burying him, And Esav comes and he goes kvetching them about a burial place, and then they send Naphtali to go to Eretz Yisrael to get the shtar and this and that, you know, and Hushim, who is deaf, he sees what's going on, and he asks his brothers, why is Zadie lying there in shame? Why is Tati lying? No, it was Zadie for him. Why is Zadie lying there in shame? And they sign languaged or whatever to him, however they told him, you know, what's tutzal over here? And he took a stick and he knocked Asa's head off because he saw it beskira achas. Uh-oh. Sorry. He saw it beskira achas. That's the idea of beskira achas, that you get the picture, you know? Just get the whole picture. That's a bit more valuable than seeing the details. The details can confuse you, but when you see the whole picture, you get clarity. So this isn't true always, but in this case, I believe that it is, and that's the point I'm trying to make. So they say, people complain that in recovery we say that you can't have any and all this stuff. Why is it more machmir than the Torah and stuff, you know? So first of all, I just want to throw in all this stuff about Hashem loving your struggles and being proud of your fall with the struggle and how you feel and that you didn't go as far as you could have gone and all these other things that are true. What happens when your wife gets gonorrhea? Is Hashem proud of your struggle too? When your wife has chlamydia, or when you pass on human papillomavirus to your wife, and then, God forbid, 25 years later, she gets cervical cancer and dies, God forbid, lo aleinu? Is Hashem proud of your struggles then? And sheva yipol v'tzadik become? Great, great. Did a great job. You know, to me, it's like the most selfish, immature way to look at this whole problem for a person who is going over the top with sick behaviors. And those are the guys that very often latch on to this Sheva Yipol Tzadik business because they're having so much pain, because their behaviors are so sick and so endangering their family and their wife's health, that they need to come on to very heavy guns to keep their self-esteem. And they use these excuses. Religious excuses are the most powerful. They're tremendously powerful because they have the authority of God behind them, you know? So, grade EE, triple E bonds, you know what I mean? It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's called you're a fraud. That's what it's called. And you're standing on the Torah to keep yourself up tall because you're really below the ground. So this is a very sad thing when that happens. But let's backtrack to less serious cases, okay? And just talk about the issue a little more as it relates to addiction specifically, I hope. In recovery, since we see what we're doing as, yes, they're averus, except if it happens to be an avera that we're addicted to. Yes, it happens to be an avera. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit worse off because an alcoholic doesn't get, his eyes burst out in the kever because he drank, a pint of, rum, you know. But me, my addiction is an avera, so I'm, I'm racking up the points in my, against me and all this stuff. Nebuch, poor me. Okay, fine. That's true. That may be true, except if I'm an addict, it's an addiction. The problem is that I'm throwing away my life because I'm crazy. Because anybody who lives in a cycle of behaviors that are getting worse and worse over time, and that are endangering himself, family, endangering himself to be caught and get into a lot of trouble, and he keeps doing these things, he keeps tricking, he keeps this, he keeps that. Eventually, if he comes to the point, not you or me or his Rebbe or his psychologist or the book or whoever, says that, it's terrible, you shouldn't continue. No. If he himself comes to the point where I can't continue, it's like I'm underwater. Bo mayim ad nafesh? No, it's more. I'm under the water. I cannot breathe. I have to come up from air, from this life, from this lifestyle of mine, okay? If that's the situation that he's in, so then you're right. It's the most tragic of all situations, probably, possibly, except it's the best of all situations, you know? It's kind of like the idea of, when the Yidden were being thrown out of Eretz Yisrael, the Malachim, the Akruvim were hugging each other. And you know that if they're facing each other, that's when we're doing Ritzon Shel Malkum. So they should be turned away the most from each other when we're going out. No, but the actual going out, when we surrendered Eretz Yisrael, when we gave up Eretz Yisrael by force, we were forced, we were kicked out. We gave up Eretz Yisrael. You know, we're not here anymore. It was the worst, lowest point But that point of finally seeing the truth and finally admitting to ourselves the truth, not like the Ma'apilim who couldn't admit it and they went up the mountain anyway and they all got killed. We were leaving and we were weeping. And Yirmiyah said, all the weeping that you're doing, you could have averted it by weeping a little bit before. Okay, maybe that wasn't so nice. But he was right. And Nevi'im don't get paid for being nice. They're supposed to be right, you know? So it's true, you know? All that we were weeping and we realized, Gevalt, we lost. We've lost this battle, you know? And that was when the Malachim were the closest, because, and that's when Mashiach was born on, you know, Tisha B'Av. The Tzmicha comes from there, because that's the lowest point. And that's why when a person's in addiction, you're right. He realizes, he or she realizes that he's in addiction, and he realizes, I'm ready, I have to do anything I need to do in order to change. My life is unmanageable, not my Yetzer Hara is unmanageable. My life is unmanageable. If he gets to that point, the book doesn't, we don't try to convince him. Nothing I'm saying is trying to convince you or you or you that you have to admit your life is, this isn't a religion. This is a program of people who want it. If you don't want it, or if you don't need it, leave us alone, you know? Don't worry about it. Do whatever you believe. The Torah says you do. Leave the Torah. It's good enough for me. It's good enough for you. Gesundheit. So, but if you are an addict, so then, if you are an addict, okay, if you believe you are an addict, so then maybe the 12 steps applies to you. Maybe you can get better using the 12 steps as many, many other people have gotten better. If Graham can do it, certainly you can do it. Right? Aren't you better? Anyway, I'm just kidding. But maybe it's not a joke for you, you know? But anyhow, over the years I've been asked, you know, why are there, what, there are goyim in sex addiction recovery? What, the goyim, they don't care about any of this stuff. What, they do it, they don't, what would they be interested in recovery for? Oh, I understand, they're all child molesters, or they are rapists, or they've had, you know, sex with many, many prostitutes, and maybe that's the whole thing. And guess what? Over my years so far, probably more of the goyim who are in SA, who I know, are in mainly because of, or probably a bigger percentage of the people in SA who are there, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that, but probably more of the people who are in sexual addictions recovery that I know who are non-Jews are there for pornography than the Jews. More of the Jews are in it. More of the from Jews are in it because of things like prostitution, you know? So I don't know. I don't know what that means. People take comfort in that. I spoke with one man who is a good man, but he took a comfort in that, saying, well, that proves that we're, you know, the Yetzer Hara is bigger because we're greater. Okay, that makes you feel good, fine. You know, I don't know the truth. I'm just reporting. You know, I'm just reporting the facts that I, as I see them. What it means, the interpretation's up to you. But anyway, where was I? I'm sorry. Okay, let me... I'm not sure where I went with that, but I apologize for being a little scattered here. So as far as we're concerned, as far as Alcoholics Anonymous is concerned, they say in the books, we're not trying to stop anyone from drinking, okay? We're not going out there trying to prevent other people from drinking, because AAs say that they realize that drinking isn't for them, but that doesn't mean it's not for other people. And in sex addiction recovery, generally the people that I meet, again, I'm not speaking for a group now, I'm just speaking for the people that I meet in it, let's just say that. Most of the people that I meet, and my sponsor also, was very careful to say that we're not saying that that it's bad for other people to do it. You know, we're just saying that for us, sexual acting out just doesn't work. It causes us problems and our lives become unmanageable because we are that way, because we're people who would do that, you know? So we can't tolerate that anymore. But for someone else to be acting out their sexual, lusts and stuff, you know, that's their issue. That's not us for us to judge, you know, whether they're addicts or not. I hear people say, oh, this and this guy, oh, he gets caught in the news with this woman fooling around. Oh, he's probably one of us. You know, no, not necessarily, you know. Who's the sex addict, by the way? Who's the sex addict? The guy who's on the street corner going, as the women walk by, you know, hey, baby, how you doing? You know, you look good there, honey, you know. Is that the sex addict? Or is it the guy who's sheepishly sitting behind him going, ugh, I'm so embarrassed, and trying to look at the women to see the shape of their, you know, body as they walk by? And who's the sex addict? You know? There's a big distinction here between what the world thinks and what the truth is, I think, at least, in my experience. You know, the Olam thinks, like, oh, you're preachistic, a slob, you're a sex addict. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. There's such a thing as Rishayim that are not sex addicts, and there's such a thing as the sex addicts that are not Rishayim, too. You know, just because a person is preachistic doesn't mean that he's a sex addict. There's such a thing as preachistic people, and they're just preachistic people, period. The ones that wear it openly, usually they're not sex addicts. The ones who hide it and hide it and hide it, whether it's because they're hiding it behind Frumkeit, or whether it's because of Chilul Hashem, or whether this, or because of that, or I'm busy fighting it. That's another way to hide it. I'm busy fighting it, and Shevi Yipol Tzadik, blah, 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 blah. It's all a mechanism, in some cases, for a person to hide it and keep it hidden. And they can employ many pisgamim in Chazal and things, you know, Shevi Yipol Tzadik, it's Chilul Hashem, you know, you know, Miyutin Ba'arai, whatever, you know, Shalom Bayis, Mishana Mipnei HaShalom, Mishana Mipnei HaShalom. I used to say how it's like the 11th commandment for a sex addict, the Mishana Mipnei HaShalom, you know, this, you know, make sure that you lie to maintain Shalom Bayis, you know, and they go this way, fooling their wives for their whole life as a married person, like I did for 11 years, that, you know, that they're really married to somebody who they don't even know. And Dafka, the closest ones, don't know us the least. You know? It's a tragedy. And I'm not getting into the issue of whether to tell a spouse or not. That's beyond the scope of this thing. Addicts can also be misgaber on the Yetzer Hara. There's no question about it. Even in regards to this problem, okay? It doesn't mean that we're not powerless. Because powerless to me doesn't mean, when I say I'm powerless, I've heard guys use the term I'm powerless, and they misuse it, and they make themselves worse with it. That's not my responsibility, okay? But it happens. And that doesn't mean to me that you shouldn't join SA because there's going to be somebody who's saying this stupid thing. Oh, I'm powerless, you know, and therefore it's an excuse. Like, oh, I'm powerless, and I just go around, and I go crazy all the time, you know? Well, you know, you want to twist the program up, that's your fault. That's not my problem. When I'm in a meeting and a guy sitting next to me bursts into tears and he says, I did it again, I acted out again, and I did this and da-da-da-da-da-da, to me, I don't do this because it's not nice, but I want to turn to him and give him a hug and say, thank you so much, you acted out so I don't have to. Because I would go back. If I could go back, you know, and live a great life without, you know, even though I'm acting out all my sexual fantasies, somehow, if I could still have my God, if I could still have my family, if I could still have, you know, my wife and my job and my sanity, then there's no question that I would do it. I'm not saying that I would choose to do it. Chas v'sholem, I believe I'm a frum Jew, and I believe it's wrong, and I'm very happy that I'm sober. And I often cry tears of joy about how lucky I am that I'm sober, thank God, today. But let me not fool myself. I went for all those years trying to stop, with the Torah and the Yiddishkeit and the Yerushalayim and everything and all the stuff, and I did it anyway, even though I believed how wrong it was and all this. In my recovery, I didn't get sober and stay sober, thank God, one day at a time so far, because of my Yerushalayim. It all came because of my pain. It's because of my acting out. You know, it's like, to me as an addict, sobriety is mamish like what they say about Purim, which is Heintika Parsha here coming up almost soon. You know, they say that Hashem sent 48 Nevi'ahs, you know, Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'ahs or whatever the number is, and they were misnabi to Klai Yisrael to do tshuva, and it didn't work, you know, and it wasn't even close. All this was accomplished easily by who? By Haman when he gave the ring over to Ahasuerus, when he gives the ring over to Haman. You know? Well, that's your bottom, isn't it? That's my bottom, isn't it? You know? All the Nevi'im and all the Nevi'is and all the Hasidus and all of this, I learned Tanya, I learned this, I learned that. Don't worry. Okay, I'm not the world's biggest Talmud Chacham, obviously. I'm not even a Talmud Chacham, but you know, I learned. I tried. I did a lot of things. It didn't work for me. I'm not going to pretend that it was because of my years Shemayim. I'm going to know that it's because of my acting out that I finally had to quit. You know? That's the truth. So, you know, I'm not going to be fooled. You know? If a person can quit that way, fine. If a person sees that they're not going to, that they don't quit that way until they finally hit bottom, and then they find a group of other people who they cannot be ashamed with of the truth about themselves and say the truth so that they can stay sober and clean. How can somebody fault this person? You know, I mean, that's how can somebody fault this person? But anyway. That's just the way that it worked for me. I hope you can see where I'm going with this. I have two questions. I'm not sure if I covered those points completely. I think I got a little bit lost somewhere. But there's somebody. I'm going to read out three texts. Someone asked, so when does that apply? Tzadik Yipol. I'm not sure what that means. When does that apply? The next question, but maybe it'll come up here. How do you understand the recovery process for a non-addict? What's actually changing when we use the various tools available? Are we just strengthening our willpower? Yes, I think that you are strengthening your willpower. I think that a normal person has willpower, and your tools of your emunah and your tools of self-control. Of doing what's best for yourself. Im ein ani li, ni li. You know? That's what he said. Im ein ani li, ni li. So what does that mean? That means that if you're not for yourself, if you can't do what's best for your own self, then you're in big trouble. So, you know, im ein ani li, ni li. So a normal person who's not an addict, you know, you've got plenty of tools to use. And an addict does too, you know, but they're not going to work if he's an addict. If he's an addict, then that's defined by the fact that they don't work for him. So like I was saying before, I know that I would go back to acting out if I really could, because I have no evidence to the contrary, because I had the Yiras Shamayim and all this stuff before, I think. And I acted out anyway. So let me not fool myself to say that if I really could do all the stuff that I wanted to and still keep a life that's manageable, that I would, you know, that let me not fool myself to say that I know I would never go back. You know, the man that I am now is not the same man that I was 19 years ago, you know, but I have to have the humility. I believe that I have to have the humility today, if I want to stay in recovery, if I want to stay the man that I am, the sober man that Baruch Hashem I am today, I think that I have to believe, I have to have the humility to admit that I don't know, I can't say, oh, now I'd never go back if all the problems with acting out were not there, if everything that led to my bottom was not there, the fact that if I could keep my sanity and I could keep my God and I could keep my relationship with my wife and I could do all these things that I couldn't do when I hit my bottom, if I could do them now, then I still wouldn't, because, you know, it's usher, you know, shakeitza shaktenu, seitza zavenu, gicherem hu, whatever, you know. I can't pretend that to myself. That's not lacking Yiras Shamayim. That's called humility. To me, that's just humility. It's recognizing what I know is the truth and saying, well, I don't know otherwise. Why should I pretend that I know that I would never go back? That's called gaiva, you know? It's just gaiva. It's not Azus the Kedusha. That's just plain Azus. Calling it Kedusha doesn't happen because you dress it with a shtreimel, you know, or a bekesha. That doesn't make Azus the Kedusha. So somebody texted, are we just strengthening our willpower if you're not an addict? Yeah, you may. There's a science of recovery, of dealing with addiction in psychology that focuses on thought control and such things, which come up derech agav in 12-step recovery also, but in a very different way. But, you know, I mean, why not try that? Why not try that before you try 12 steps? Why not? Like, 12 steps doesn't say, try us first, try us, please, try us, me, you know, raising our hand and jumping up and down. That's not 12-step recovery. We're saying, if you want what we have, so then we'll share with you how we have it. That's all. You don't have to accept that your powerlessness or anything. If you decide that your powerlessness, join us. If you admit you are, then we admit we are too. Join us if you want to. We'll be happy to share what we have with you. So, okay, hang on. I'm reading another text that someone sent with a question for this topic. If I didn't hit a very low bottom, how can I look at the program with the right attitude without waiting till I reach a low bottom? That's a very good question. But that doesn't really have to do with Frumkeit in recovery issue. And I'd like to pass on that one. I'm sorry. Maybe we'll touch on it later. I don't know. But let me try to focus a little bit on why some guys lose some aspects of their Frumkeit, apparently, in recovery. And I want to talk about that topic a little bit, Bezer Hashem. I want to lay a little ground rules over here, okay? That I want to say that I think there are failures everywhere. If you look in the Jewish world, we pride ourselves on passing along the Masorah, but there's a topic that's very popular for the past 15 years called teens at risk. Just look around at certain Hasidic communities and certain yeshivish communities, and look at how many kids there are out there smoking pot or just smoking, getting together with girls, doing who knows what, and just throwing off Yiddishkeit. There's plenty, you know. And not only that, but there's plenty of guys that I know who are Rosh Kolels, who are Tamei Chachamim, who are good Jews, but they're having sex with prostitutes on a regular basis or a semi-regular basis. They're masturbating themselves, which is having sex with someone else other than their wife. It's called yourself. And on a regular basis or a semi-regular basis, looking at pornography, which is sex with your eyes, you know, it's trying to pretend that you're in the thing with her, that she's looking at you, et cetera, or that he's looking at you or whatever. And, you know, they're doing this on a regular, are these people frum or not? Well, the guy wears a kaputa. He's obviously frum. I mean, he's makbid on shkia even, you know, or he's makbid on dafka Rabbeinu Tam, and he wears the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, and he's makbid on this and that. Okay, well, how do you know who's frum exactly? This is a discussion for bigger people than me to have. I'm just bringing up the issue that it's not so glatt. If your behavior, if you're a sexually acting out, obviously from guy, for example, and you're sexually acting out, so then if Lu Yitzuyer, a goy, would see a movie of all your behaviors, he would or your wife, let's say, or any from Jew, let's say, would see it, the person would not conclude that you're really from, the person would conclude that since you burst into tears when you come back into shul after you wash yourself off from the schmutz, and then you cry and you this, and you sincerely go into the mikveh and you say the Asar Kapitlach and you even read the whole Ribbono Shel Olam after that Rabbi Nachman, that Rabbi Nosson wrote from you know, through Rabbi Nachman's, you know, teaching, and you mamish cry, and then when you do tshuva, you cry by l'chadodi, oh, you've taken me back, I feel it, and you're so excited. He would conclude that, number one, you're crazy. Number two, you're very religious. You're a religious-minded person. That you're observant, he would never say. Because you're obviously not observant if you do these things. That is not to say that all observant people are tzaddik and gemurim. But there's a big difference between every now and then being nifshal in lashon hara, or avak lashon hara, like the Gemara says most of us are nifshalin, and, you know, or being avakal Torah, which the Gemara implies very clearly most people are nifshalin, because it says yitle bitl Torah in Gemara Brachas, so you see that you can assume that you were. There's a very big difference between those things and intentionally going, violating trusts of the people around you. If you're married, violating the trust of your wife and putting your thing in some other person's body. If you're not married, having sex with yourself or looking at naked people and then appearing in the yeshiva and acting 100% like you're normal and just like everybody else. It's Geneva's Das. It's a Neurik of Geneva's Das. And this is not the same as somebody who is Mavakal Torah sometimes or says Janara sometimes. You know, that's an entirely different level of non-observance. Like a certain very chushiva Talmud Chacham, who I know in a very chushiva neighborhood, told me once when first few conversations with him on the phone, he was looking at videos and smashing the videos, and then he was buying another one and smashed the next video. He bought, I think this was the same guy, he bought a tablet, you know, because you can get them maybe for cheap, so he bought a tablet and watched dirty videos on that he downloaded and bought and smashed it, and he bought another one and he smashed it. I said, you're like Moshe Rabbeinu smashing the tablets over here. But so finally he says to me, after we talked and talked and talked, you know, I just asked him, you know, do you think that Nazis went home after killing Jews and they cried to their wives about how horrible they feel, and then the next day they went back to killing Jews, and then they said, oh, I can't believe they killed another Jew today, and this and that, and they cried, and then they came back to work the next day? No, they didn't do that, because they were bad, you know? So are you bad? Who cries about this stuff and then does it, spends $50, $80, and then smashes it, sometimes even before he watches the video, sometimes after, and he smashes it, and then he buys another one the next day. But he started to laugh, and he said, I see, I'm not bad, I'm crazy. Doesn't mean that he's not bad, that what he's doing isn't bad. Of course what he's doing is bad, but that's not the point. The point is that he's crazy. First, he has to stop being crazy. That's the first thing. So you come into a recovery group, and you realize, I have to stop being crazy. That's the first thing. First thing, I have to stop being a fraud. So what am I supposed to do? Clap on the bima in yeshiva and announce to everybody, oh, I masturbate, I look at pornography, and I do this and I do that. That's not going to help you at all. Because some of them are doing it, and they're going to laugh at you because call a posel b'mumu posel. Some of them are going to throw you out because they're also doing it and call a posel b'mumu posel. And some of them aren't doing it, and they're not going to understand what you're doing, and people are going to talk about you, and it's going to hurt your shidduchim and your children and everything else because it gets public. But going to meetings doesn't do that. People who come to meetings, they don't get publicized in the community. You know, thank God. You know, thank God. It's a bracha from Hashem. You know, so, I mean, you know, the first thing is to stop being a fraud. Clapping on a bina isn't going to do that. Finding people who are safe to open up with, and not from behind a fake name, that's a good step in the right direction, but that's not going to work for many people. So, you know, the first thing is don't be a fraud. You know, that's the first thing. Now, I lost track of where I was. I'm so sorry. Let me try to remember. I'm sorry. This is the disadvantage of having everybody muted. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to unmute. If you know the track I was on, maybe you can unmute yourself and tell me or text me if you have my number. The clapping on the bima is not going to do it, right? so sorry. Well, all right, let me just continue on the general direction that I was going, and I think I'll come back to it. I apologize to the other one. So the person who's doing all these things, is he really from? It's hard for me to determine that, you know? It's hard for me to say, but it's clear that he's crazy. It's clear that he has a double life. You have a double life, you're crazy. If you can tolerate being insane, so then that's fine, you know? I mean, it's not fine. It's none of my business, really. It's sad. I can be sad about it, but it's not my issue. It's your issue. Okay. People texted me twice already. Please discuss why people are getting weak in Yiddishkeit in the program. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm getting to it. So why is it that you have these frum guys who are acting out in all these ways? Why is it that they're acting out? They're frum and they're acting out. So my first question is, are they really frum? What's going on over here? I think they are frum. I do. But what happens when they find out how much of a fraud they are? You see, the problem isn't their sins. That's not the issue. The problem isn't the tumah and the iser and this and that. The Gemara says, chamira sakanta chamira me'isura. Recovery is about sakanta. I cannot manage this anymore. That's a sakana. I cannot live this way anymore. Terrible things happen to people. Their lives are flushed down the toilet. Some of them never commit suicide. I actually know a few. And many marriages are destroyed. Lives are destroyed. This is sakanta. The issue is isura and sakanta, and the sakanta rises above it. What happens when they realize that and they start to see that gewalt, there's something more important, there's something that's a derech eretz kadma l'torah, and I'm missing derech eretz, you know, it's a shock to the system. It's a shock to the system. It's hard to know what will happen to a person when he or she realizes how much of a fraud they are and how much their frumkeit was used by us as a shield to protect our good name or to make up in our minds for the bad things we did, so we did a bunch of good things, you know? Who's to say what will happen to a person when he realizes that? I don't know. Some people undergo a great deal of trauma realizing that. That's why it's really good, if you feel like you need it, it's really good for a lot of people to have a therapist who understands from people, you know, who can help you deal with that trauma. Because this wasn't just alcohol. This is worse. Because this was an aveira together with alcohol. It affects you in a deeper way in terms of your Yiddishkeit. The alcohol maybe you can get away with, and it might not affect you as badly, but here you see that you were a fraud. You were a trickster. Gnevus Das was the way you live, the way I live in my addiction, is Gnevus Das. That's why as soon as I do some Gnevus Das now, I feel a tickle inside me, because I know it's the same feeling as the lusting, is embellishing a story or lying about something. I feel like I'm acting out. It's a horrible feeling. You know, so you don't know what's going to happen. That's number one. I want people to understand that. The other thing is that there are many people who were brought into the situation that they are now as a fully decked out brim person, not necessarily by their own free will. Many of us, were brought into our frumkeit as we are, because we were basically coerced to be that way by our parents. Now, does that mean that we shouldn't be from Chas v'Shalom? I believe that Torah is true. I believe it's the right thing to do. Except that doesn't create a person who keeps his Yiddishkeit under all circumstances. That creates a person. Hang on a second. That creates a person who, when something happens that shakes them very, very badly, very hard, their Yiddishkeit might take a back seat. I'm trying to say that this isn't a program issue. This is an issue that they've always had, you know. For example, many people came from Europe. They were pretty frum. Kimat all of them became not frum in America. Kimat all of them. And many of them were not frum, that's true. But many were frum. And their children were mamish, like goyim, you know. And how did this happen? Well, probably it's because they didn't have the spirituality of Yiddishkeit. Probably they didn't have the spirituality of Yiddishkeit. They just had the, you know, the obligation, the pflicht, you know, they had the requirement. You know, I have to do this. Now all of a sudden they find something that really means something to them, because they've been lying and hiding and faking their whole life. And they've even been using their frumkeit as a shield to maintain their self-respect and be part of some community and something. And they come to see that they've been faking, you know? They have, and it's the truth. They've been faking. How do you not have rachmanis on this person and treat him like a bal tshuva? How do you not give him the space to step back a little bit, find himself, and grow? Why do you have to use your judgmentalism against him and say, well, I was brought up as a frum person, and this is how I believe, and I have all the sparim to show me that I'm right, and everyone knows, and the tzaddik, and the rebbe, and this and that, and he shouldn't do what he's doing. The Sfasema says, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Al tadin chaverecha el ad shetamid b'mkomo, you know? And then the Sfasema adds, v'lo sa'amod, you know? I think those are the words. You're not going to be in his shoes, you know? So I'm not saying an excuse. I'm just saying, chod rachmanis. You don't understand what this person is going through. It's going to be a process. If his Yiddishkeit cools down, guess what cooled down? What probably cooled down is what he was using as a shield in his ego to try to say, you see, I'm a good guy. I can daven mitabren. I can do fire and here. In the meantime, what's he doing? In the meantime, he's masturbating himself, you know, frequently. There he is. He's in the bathroom. He's masturbating himself. He's walking out. Mitabren and davening. You know, I'm not saying that it has to be, you know, tekef, but I'm just saying that there's something wrong here. It's not about averus and mitzvahs. As long as you are chopped in and boxed in to it's an avera, and that's the whole point, and everybody does averus, and everybody does tshuva, and this is normal, and what's the big deal? What does it have to collapse everything for? You're doing tshuva, then that's not tshuva. You don't understand what we're talking about. We're not talking about averus here. We're talking about a person who is a trick, a person who is a game. They're a trick. They're false. It's not that they're doing things that are a problem. It's that I see that I am, in my addiction, I come to see that I am a false human being. Any goy has to be a mensch to be happy in himself. He can't be a double-faced human being if he's going to have peace of mind. You know, if you're a double-faced human being, what does it matter who you are, what religion, what everything? This is sanity. This is an issue of sanity. So if you're not going to address that and you're going to say that, no, the only thing that matters is that he does this and does this exactly like I think he should and like the Mechaber says he should, and don't you believe in the Shulchan Aruch? Of course I believe in the Shulchan Aruch. Of course I believe it's a tragedy. As a Jew, I believe it's a tragedy when a person, you know, but not if the things that they were doing were part of their sickness itself. Now you can say, how can you say that the mitzvahs and the good things he was doing were part of the sickness in itself? Gewalt. But if you don't see that by now, then I don't know what to say. Don't you know that there are people with OCD who are encouraged in their OCD in Yiddishkeit, and they fly under the radar because we don't even notice that they have OCD. We don't even know, you know how many nuts there are who are from, you know? It's you know, they use the Frumkeit to kind of deal with it and function as part of a society. Because, well, you know, the chametz, and you have to do this, and you have to do that, and you drive your children crazy, you drive your wife crazy, and this, but it's all mitzvah, what do you mean? You know, they hide behind, and it's just OCD. They're just crazy people, that's all. That's all. They're just plain crazy, you know? So is it really L'shem Shemayim what they're doing? No, it's not. You know, Reb Zvi Meyer says, by the way, by Pesach, he goes on and on about not being makpid al bnei beso when he's doing in the whole chametz thing and this, that mamish to still have peace in the house without any hakpadas davka when you're cleaning for chametz and everything, because he recognizes, I mean, he sees, he's a chacham and a tzaddik, and he realizes what's going on, you know? But how do you not do these things if you're really crazy? So then you're going to do something else. He's going to pick up some other mishigas to be, you know, addicted to or OCD to or whatever about it, or to have power over other people about it, because he's got to find it somewhere, you know? So if this person starts doing things that are more makel in, you know, in the chametz, people who saw him before will think he's a shagetz, or other people who do all these things will, you know, oh, all of a sudden he's selling chametz, oh, he's a shagetz, you know? It's like, well, excuse me, I don't see it that way. I see this as the guy's in therapy and he's getting better, you know? So now guys who lose their bren in Yiddishkeit, some of them, their bren was there in order to facilitate the tshuva roller coaster, which was really just getting them worse and worse. I wrote this a long time ago in the nuclear reset button, that there are many people who you know, they get into the tshuva process. There's no high like a tshuva high. Hashem took me back. You know, Makom Shabali Tshuva Om Demein Tzidikim Gemur Mecholam La'am Lo. There's nothing like it. They live for 2-3 more weeks like this, and they realize it's just mediocre living. You know, where's the Frischkeit? You know, where is it? What's going on? Eventually, they act out, not intentionally thinking that way, but they eventually need to act out because the only real Avodas Hashem is what they might identify as the Breslover Avodas Hashem, where you're doing this tshuva from a horrible affair or some other brand of it, whatever they happen to name on, you know? And it's not Breslover at all. It's just, that's what they identify it as. And Zera Levatola, Gevald, you have to have a tshuva ilah, and the Tanya says here and that. Okay, so Reshis Chokhmah too, so no. So they get very high. That's the only high they know. So they start having, and if you look at a lot of people, you see that they got frum, not frum, they were born frum sometimes, but they got serious about the mitzvahs and serious in the davening around the time that they started masturbating. You know? What is that? That happens a lot. I'm not saying it happens all the time. I'm just saying that it happens a lot because they have sexual tensions, they have sexual pain, they have failures, and they start playing this shuckle game of trying to beat it. It's like you're running from a tree that's falling down. So what are they supposed to do? Maybe if they found understanding adults and got good hadracha, they might be okay. But some people don't. Some people hide it forever. They don't open to anybody their whole life until things fall apart. I've spoken to many of them. You know? And sometimes they do open up and they get horrible, horrible hadracha. So that's another problem. Sometimes what happens is that somebody discovers that in recovery their frumkeit has been used by them to drive themselves crazy, to punish themselves, or to drive themselves crazy. This happens, I think, in a lot of cases where people take things upon themselves. You know, like, I'm going to be in yeshiva, I'm going to learn in yeshiva, I'm going to do like this guy, and I want to be in kolo and this, even though they don't get a real sipuka nefesh from it, but they need to be like someone else. They need to keep up, you know, they need to have that self-respect. Or because something, they're innocent, and something inside tells them that this is the way you should be happy, and that's it, you know. These kind of people might not be a majority, but there are quite a few people like this, and they're real life people. And when the bubble finally bursts, a lot of them discover that, you know, the one thing they can do that'll keep them acting out is learning three siddharam a day. You know, if they want to keep acting out, that's the one insurance that they have, that they're going to keep acting out their lust and everything, and they're not going to be able to get clean. Learn three siddharam a day, because they're not cut out for it, and they're driving themselves crazy. And they come to the Rebbe and they say, I want to learn one seder a day and go to business, and the Rebbe says, Oy gewalt, essay made a shake, it's out of you. You know? There are some people that they find their davening. They're sober, okay, and they find their davening plus. I was at an international convention of a recovery fellowship in Cleveland. I think it was 1998 or something like that. I don't know. And I was about a year or so sober, and I felt my davening got weaker. I didn't feel such a big connection in my davening, and you know why? Because the power in my davening before that, excuse me, while I was back in the years before recovery, the thing that was powering my davening wasn't, the Chazon Ish talking about Tefillah and Torah and how they're connected and this. It wasn't Reb Dessler and the stuff about Tefillah. It wasn't Reb Shimshon Pinkus or any. It wasn't any of that. It was the fact that I was masturbating and that I was hiding and lying and faking and tricking everybody, and I had desires and problems and, you know, all this other stuff. That's the stuff that was powering my davening. So for someone to think, oh, well, now that he's sober, he should have even a better davening, of course. No, especially if it's a spiritual program. No. You don't understand. You just took all the gas out of this poor guy's engine. And now what do you expect is going to happen to him? You know, well, obviously, he has to find an engine that runs on something else. That's all, and it takes time. So I went in. It was driving me crazy. I was skipping Myrav sometimes, and my davening. You know, I just didn't feel a desire to do lots of things like I did before. Of course, my desire, I saw later, was being fueled. I thought it was my Yiras Shemayim because I could use the same words. Yes, I want to do the mitzvah. It's good. You see, it's and L'shem Yichud and this and that. I could say all the words. It was all like, yeah, it fits. But there was another thing, another motivation, you know, there was a paniya. There was another motivation like on a transparency laying on top of that. That was really what was my guidebook, what was pushing me that I wasn't aware of. And that was the horrifying guilt and shame of my acting out. So in recovery, that stuff started going away. I didn't have that anymore, and there was very little fuel left to motivate me. It was very confusing and very scary. And I came to a guy who had like 10, 15 years of sobriety, and I said to him, a frum guy, a very frum guy, a rav, and I said to him, who was at this sexaholics, in recovery convention, And I met him in his hotel room, and I said to him, I poured out my heart. I said, this is what's happening to me. And he said to me, you think you can be patient for a year or two? I mean, are you doing a lot? You know, are you doing averus now because or are you just not doing mitzvahs and stuff as much? And I said, no, I'm not doing any averus. I'm like, I'm not keeping Shabbos. I'm just, you know, I don't have a strong motivation for keeping Shabbat. But he said, if you keep this stuff up and you really work your program right and you want to be frum, so then it's going to come back. And eventually it's going to be better than it was before. And he was 100% right. Some guys don't really want to be frum. And it's a shame. But there's nothing you or I can do about that. Okay? So, but if you want to be from, it will come back, and things will be okay. Hang on just 1 second. My daughter needs something. Hi, honey. She's taking off. Okay, thank you. How about that? So, by the way, this guy didn't say this to me, but I learned from Reb Zvi Meyer that some of the very early rebbes, some of the Talmidim of the Maggid, said, I don't remember who it was, said that I think it's Reb Levi Yitzchak or Noam Elimelech, I don't remember, I think. Early people said that either Talmud of the Maggid or Talmud of the Chozer, I think, but said that the power in your mitzvahs and your Meisim Tovim, your davening and your Yiddishkeit, that's like a tremendous explosion of kavana and gishmak and ratzon that you have and everything. That comes from the times that you served Hashem and did the mitzvahs when you had absolutely no motivation to do it. And I remember learning that and reading that from, you know, and thinking to myself, well, isn't it horrifying not to have a motivation to do it? You know, if you look in the Igle Tal, the Hakdama, he says that people think you should learn Torah and you shouldn't be happy because then it's going to be more lishma. He says, punfakert. That's part of the mitzvah of learning Torah, that it's gishmak and beautiful. To feel the beauty of it is part of the way it should be. So if you don't, there's a padam. So if you don't have any gishmak in your Yiddishkeit and your avoda and this, and you do it anyway with no feeling whatsoever, to me that's disgusting. Ugh, the shanda. And that's what people complain happens to guys in recovery. And these tzaddikim say that, no, if you hold on and you do it without a gishmak, not perfectly without a gishmak, you just do it without a gishmak. So then they say that's even better. Because the stuff that you get when you're high isn't from you. It was a gift from when you did it with no motivation whatsoever. Like, ugh, I feel this is useless. Why am I doing this? But it's the right thing to do. Hashem wants me to do it. That's it. I'm just going to do it. Okay. And it's over and it's done. And you didn't feel a gishmak through the whole thing. Not before, not during, not after. That's the biggest part of the Avodas Hashem. And from there comes all your high stuff, you know? So, now how about the guys who start dropping things? Well, you know, every case is different. Every case has to be, the group can't talk to a guy who's dropping things. The group can't judge a guy, I'm talking about a recovery group, can't talk to a guy. You have to know the guy. You know, it has to be personal, one-on-one, because every person is different. I just brought up a few klolim to help people understand. None of them are excuses. They're what I think are just the way things are for people. And some things are right for some, and some things that's not the way it is with others. You know? So, every situation is going to be different. To look at them, to lump everything together, you know, or to go after one case that happens, it's very sad to me because it doesn't, there's no wisdom in that. For guys who lose things and start dropping things and stuff, I think it's important to understand that just because one person does that, that doesn't mean that I'm going to do that. It depends on what you want. The guys who I've spoken to, who drop things, who are very, I don't know many, I have to say, but the guys who I've spoken to admitted to me that they didn't really want to do them before, you know? So, I don't know. It's like, when you come into a case like that, I have to be honest with you that I don't understand, like, what's right and what's wrong over here. Do you really think that it's better to have a guy? I mean, I know one guy who's involved in, I won't say the type, of course, but he's involved in some manner of community outreach, from community outreach. He's having sex with his housekeeper, okay, on a regular basis. His wife doesn't know, okay? He could be passing diseases onto his wife, God forbid. He could, who knows what he's doing to his, you know, obviously his neshama, but obviously, you know, he's living a lie. He's obviously a crazy person. You know, it's not just that. It's part of a whole picture of lies that he's doing and manipulation. And we don't even realize how much we manipulate God as addicts in our tefillah. We try to do things to manipulate God, to make him forgive us, to beg him enough that he forgives us. It's just manipulating God. That's not tefillah. That's manipulation. We don't even see how crazy we are in our addiction until after the sobriety comes. The clarity comes after sobriety, not before sobriety. When you reach, you think you're clear every time you finish masturbating, and now you have no yetzer hara, and now you feel like you have clarity. It's a lie. You don't have clarity then. You have vicer lies and self-destruction and confusion. It's only when you stop and you stay stopped at some point soon after that, you start to get clarity. And this is the experience of everybody I know in recovery. And then they start to realize everything that they were doing before that was crazy or not crazy or good or bad in a much more honest light. But before, if you're still acting out your lust, you can't look at other people and judge sanely. So who's better, the guy who's doing this, and yet look at all the neshamas that he's helping with his community outreach stuff that he's doing and the speeches he's giving. Is that better? Or is it better that he shouldn't be doing any of those things and he should just be a guy going to business and sober? Which is better? He's being Marbet Torah, but he's also masturbating and having sex with his housekeeper, you know? And he's married and it's like, which one is better, you know? It's so easy for you to choose, huh? Well, then you're one of the people that has all the answers, you know? And I learned a long time ago, always search for the truth, the truth, the truth, the truth. And when you find someone who knows all the truth, go the other way, you know? If you find someone who knows everything, who has an answer for everything, he has an answer for all the questions, he has all the answers. Go somewhere else, you know? You're not going to find the truth with that person. You know? Rashi said, Lamod l'shon chalomar eini yudeya. Why? And Rashi wrote some Rashis saying, I don't know how to darshan this pasuk. Like, why did he have to write that? Why didn't he have to skip it? You know how many psukim Rashi skipped? There's so many kashas I have on psukim, and I'm thinking, oh, I bet Rashi says something. I don't remember what he said. I look it up, and there's no Rashi on the pasuk. I'm like, ah, darn it. You know? He skipped all kinds of stuff, because obviously it was obvious to him, because every now and then he goes, well, I don't know, you know? Why did he have to write, I don't know? You know? Why all of a sudden, when it comes to judging other people, you know why? Because it makes you feel insecure. And because you have a way that you think fixes everybody and you want to try to... It's all about me. It's all about you. It's all about, you know, stop judging other people. You know, have rachmanis for other people. Realize that they're not you. Maybe they didn't have your glorious upbringing where everything was geschmack and sweet and everything. Maybe they didn't have that. Maybe they built themselves into what they are as a giant facade. Oh, yeah, but it's mitzvahs. They can't stop anything that they're doing for them to cut down or leave their job. But how do you know how sick they are? You don't know. So I'd rather not judge people. I'd rather not make up my mind for who's good and who's bad and who's doing right and who's doing wrong. I'd rather have patience and love for people who want to change their lives better and quit living a lie and being a fake and being a fraud. If he's motivated to not be a fraud anymore and he's taking a step in that direction, to me, that's everything. To me, that's everything. Does that mean that if he converts to be a Christian, then it's okay as long as he's sober? No, because I don't believe that you can run away from who you are. You know, there was a Lubavitcher Shliach in a faraway country who was acting out terribly and this and that, and he was getting sober, and he's a beautiful man and really beautiful guy. And he got sober, and he's sober for years now, thank God. Tremendous person, tremendous person. And at some point he says to me, you know, I think I have to leave my shlichus, you know? I think I have to leave my shlichus. And And I said, why? And he goes, oh, it's too much pressure for me. I can't stay sober. I need to put my sobriety first. I said, yeah, of course you put your sobriety first, except you were born, were you born with barbiturates? The guy says, yeah. Says, you realize that you've been doing push-ups to save the world ever since you were a fetus? You realize who you are? You're a Lubavitcher. You're your father's chef? Yes, my father's chef. You can't run away from this. If you run away from this and dump it for your sobriety, you're not going to find sobriety because you're running away from who you are. And that's why guys who really dump mitzvahs, they're not going to find sobriety either. They're going to be kareach mizeh to kareach mizeh. And that's what's going to eventually happen to them. And I believe that God has grace to place this. I can't blame recovery people for this. I have to just say this is the journey this guy, unfortunately, sadly, had to go on. And when he realizes that he's kareach mizeh to kareach mizeh, that he's really, he's not sober, and he's not anything, and he's not being who he is, he's not true to himself, and he's not true to his sobriety, so then he'll come around and he'll turn out okay if he wants to be frum. I can't fault someone for not wanting to be frum. I want to be frum. You know? I don't understand how people could not want to be frum. It's great. But I see that some people seem to have good kindness, you know. They had bad experiences when they were children, they were forced into it, etc. You don't know what someone's been through, you know? So, I mean, you know. The other thing, and I really have to finish up, it's been about 2 hours. Oh, well, not quite. We started at a little bit closer to nine. But there's so much more to say on this topic, and I'm going to leave out a lot, and I'm sorry. But there are a lot of people let me just finish up. Some people say I can't fast, for example. Okay, they'll say, I find out that if I fast, I act out. So I'm not fasting anymore. So first of all, obviously, come on. They should ask a Rav to Shaila. So now, how many people have I read on Guard Your Eyes that say, I asked my Rav Shaila if I should go to recovery, and he said no. Like, but what did you tell him? And I talked to these guys, say, well, what did you tell the Rav? So I told him I'm Nechshel in Zer LaTorah, and, you know, Shmir said I have problems. Like, what? Excuse me? Like, that's not your problem. Tell him how many times you do it a day. Tell him how many times you do it a week. Tell him what kind of pornography you watch, you know? Tell him when you watch it and how you watch it. That you steal people's tablets, iPhones, and you look and this and that. Tell him about the phone sex that you're doing. You know, don't leave out the phone sex. Tell him the truth. You know. So, oh no, I can't do that. So then you're not asking the Shaila. So your Rav's psak means nothing because he didn't paskin for you. He paskin for somebody else. Oh, but I can't do that. It's too embarrassing. Okay, so then either your recovery isn't important enough to you, or your Yiddishkeit isn't important enough to you. One or the other. One of them is not important enough to you. You know, I don't think either is very good. So how about the guy who asks his Rav Shaila, and his Rav says, "Oh yeah, you shouldn't fast." And there are many Rabbanim who paskin for sex for addicts of all kinds. You know, when you fast, you act out. Don't fast. Okay, fine. So I don't know the particulars of which fast, and if I'm not getting into that here. But that's the psak that a lot of these guys get. Guess what happens when they don't fast? Sometimes it helps them. Sometimes it hurts them. Why? Because you can't run away from who you are. If you really are from Jew, and you really want to be from, so then when you don't fast, it's going to drive you crazy. You know? It's going to drive you crazy, and the guilt and the pain and this is going to drive you to acting out. So does that mean that I'm saying that everyone should fast because it's going to cause you to act out? No, everybody's different is what I'm saying. And if you want to be a Rav who paskins at this, and I can be the Raya's Brewer's that you have to fast, and if you're sick, oh, there's no, if you're an addict, there's no heter, no, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking about because you're not. You don't have the fifth chelik of Shulchan Aruch. You don't even have any chelik of Shulchan Aruch because you don't know the situation of the person at all. You don't understand what fasting means for him. You don't understand what not fasting means for him. You don't know anything. You might as well just recuse yourself from the entire shaila because you don't understand addiction either. You know, if a Rav doesn't believe in addiction and he tries to paskin for a person who believes that he is an addict, the Rav really might be wrong because he might be, you know, it's a little toast, but Dvar Mishnah there to me, you know. if you don't accept that, that's fine with me. I'm not arguing with anybody about this. I'm telling you this is what I believe. I think it's Eis gehalten. You know, I think I'm being consistent. I think I'm being honest with myself. You know, and you know, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he died, he said, I have two drachim in front of me. I don't know which one I'm going to go. He says, I don't know if I'm going to heaven or I don't know if I'm going to hell. Well, you know, that's the way we are. That's the way real people are. We don't really know, but we believe and we try to do the best that we can. You know, and this is the best that I can do. You know, so I try to be understanding. If you show love for somebody who's failing to keep to who they are, which is a yid, they're failing at that because of all the years of fakery that they did and hiding behind wrapping themselves in the Torah and the mitzvahs and everything in order to continue acting out. And now they're failing in their Yiddishkeit. Instead of judging him and saying, Gewalt, da 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 da, why don't you go and shake his hand and say, you know, I'm sure if I were in your situation, I don't know what I would do. I hope, you know, if there's anything I can do to help you, just let me know. I respect that you're trying to do the right thing. You know, you don't have to tell him, you know, anything critical. I don't think you do, you know, because you don't understand where he's coming from, you know. But if he sees that you love him, if he sees that you accept him, not that you condone his behavior, but that you accept him and that you really care for him and that you don't pity and look down on him, so then he'll open up to you, probably, you know, because he'll feel safe. He'll open up to you. And maybe you'll be able to give him chizuk, because you'll be able to describe to him what you did when your Yiddishkeit started to get weak because of something else that happened in your lifetime, whether you're an addict or not. And maybe you'll be able to give him chizuk and say, you know, if you want to be firm, if you want to keep the mitzvahs, so then, if you want to end up this way, so then, you know, daven for siyata d'shmaya from Hashem. Be a better Jew, you know? Daven, admit to him that, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. You feel like if you do this stuff, you know you're just going to act out like you always used to because it's part of your pattern. And it was part of the problem, not part of the solution. And daven to him to help you make the right decisions and to get the right help and to get the right advice and for him to give you inspiration, you know, put inspiration into your heart. You know, maybe that's something you can say to him and it might be helpful. I don't know. But if you're spewing advice to him and you don't understand where he is at all, I don't think it's going to work very well. It's Dvarim Hayotzim in Alev, Nichnasim Lalev. Dvarim She'enim Yotzim in Alev, don't. You know, they're just more preaching. You know, that's my opinion. I don't think I covered everything. I know I didn't cover everything. I know that I had many things that I said that were a little non sequiturious. You know, I began with a point and probably lost my way a little bit along the way. And that's why I probably, you know, I'm sure I won't listen, Billy Netter, to this recording myself. But I'm trying to speak from my heart. I'm really trying to speak from my heart. I'm trying to take myself out and just share. I hope I didn't say anything that was misleading. Please be merciful to me if I did. And I want to end with... I want to end with the third step prayer. That addicts all over the world like. Atzi, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you know best. Please relieve me of my bondage to self so that I can do your will better. Please take away my difficulties so that victory over them helps others know your love and your power and your way of living. May I do your will always.